Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here. LastWordOnSports.com.
Yes, that's right. It's Thursday night. It's 9 o'clock. It is time for Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here. LastWordOnSports.com. My name's Russ McKenzie. I am joined by Matt Pollard, and we're going to be joined by Alec, who's on rushing his way home from seeing the Barra Brava documentary. Anyway, Matt, how you doing?
I have no idea how the U.S. men's national team moved up one spot in the FIFA poll, but then again, Gareth Bale is listed at number 9 ahead of the entire English national team.
Interesting. Sounds like somebody at FIFA is doing drugs, but you know, that's
And then the bananas that the Russian supporters group threw at Danny Alves in Champions League a year ago were listed at number 8. So there could be some questionable things associated with the scheduling of the rankings of the sport that only ethnic schoolgirls play in the United States.
Yeah, man. I know we talked about this last show, but it still irks me. Like, it really still irks me. I don't know. Like, I took that real personally. it was a gut punch. Did you see they issued an apology?
I did not see that they issued an apology.
The next day they issued an apology to U.S. soccer for those exact comments. It was hysterical, really. the whole thing with that reform committee is farcical. It really is. Like, we're talking about transparency here with FIFA, and he's not willing to answer simple questions. And I think that tells you all you need to know about the gentleman in charge of the FIFA Reform Committee. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm being too harsh. So let's take a look around the league real quick. We got a great show coming up here for you. By the way, we've got Houston Dynamo general manager Matt Jordan coming up in next segment, and we've got Portland Timbers 2 player Carlton Belmar coming up in third segment. So definitely stick around for all that. And of course, in the third segment, we've got your calls, and of course we always look forward to talking to you, all you people. So that said, let's get going. Is there a team hotter than New York Red Bulls right now?
No, there is not a team hotter than the New York Red Bulls right now, Russ.
Can we just? By the way, they had that town hall last night, and it was a
how'd
much,
that go?
Oh, it was a much different tone. There was a much different tone to it than there was.
There weren't random F-bombs being thrown around
last
time.
No, there was. You know, one of the guys got a little bit cranky about the outcome of the U.S. Open Cup and where that game was placed. But to be honest, there wasn't really much that looking at it, there wasn't really much that New York could do about it. So let's just clear this up right now, because I don't think anybody's really put this fine a point on it. The New York Red Bulls knew the basic placement of where a quarterfinal match would show up in U.S. Open Cup, and it was around July 21st. It was going to be July 21st to 22nd. They also knew that they were involved with Guinness International's International Champions Cup, which is absolutely a money grab. It absolutely is, but it's important for the game. The Forbes article has New York Red Bulls losing $9 million last year. And it's important to bring in money. That's why you know they've gone after sponsors, and they've gone after high profile friendlies. The fact of the matter is, they played a first choice lineup against Chelsea. Against Philadelphia on the afternoon of July 21st at 4 p.m. because Philadelphia didn't want to move the game. They were bound and determined to thwart the the chances of any club wanting to move that game. And the fact of the matter is, the onus was on Philly to be reasonable, and they weren't. To that end, they put out a first team lineup against the Union and losing penalty kicks. The next day, they play Chelsea with basically the USL Pro Club. And by the way, they won 4-2 against a flat-footed Chelsea that couldn't handle, you know, Tyler Adams. Anyway, or Sean Davis for that matter. But, you know, that was the one really negative thing. And that was the only time that anyone really got angry. Everyone else, their grievances were heard. There was some stuff about the arena. There was some stuff about, you know, Dax's contract. By the way, Dax is not in a contract year, which looks good for our friends at New York Red Bull. And, you know, I think that it's going to be a much different.
Is there any way, though, on that, Russ, that whenever the time comes, and if Dax fits into the free agent designation based on the new CBA, that the Red Bulls don't immediately pay him? I mean, he's been a good soldier. He's been exactly what you need. And I feel like he's a core piece going forward, even 2-3 years from now.
Not only has he been a core piece, his work rate has been out of control. Out of control. And if you look at Benjamin Harrison of American Soccer and Analysis has this method of measuring work rate. I've plotted that chart, and Dax is like all the way up in the stratosphere of, you know, defensive actions versus passes completed. He's completed more passes, I think, than anyone. I want to say anyone else in MLS. I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up.
That's for this season, though, right?
That's for this season.
Okay.
It's been a ridiculously good season for Dax, and has a lot of people wondering why he isn't getting called up to the U.S. men's national team. I don't know.
Unfortunately, Russ, I think there's like five holding midfielders who are unfortunately just a little bit ahead of him.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. No, I totally. Look, if there's one person that
Russ,
gets
that was
gets
sarcasm.
That...
I was making a Benny Fellhopper joke.
Yeah, well, Kyle Beckerman. I mean, that's the reason.
Yes.
You know, Kyle Beckerman is superhuman. He's not human. He's an alien. His work rate's out of control, too. But, you know, Dax is younger than he is. Look, I don't think that there's any way that New York Red Bulls, based on his body of work since he's been in New York, I don't see Ali Curtis not offering him a contract before he even gets to free agency. I don't see that. He's the captain. He's the heart of the team. You can see these players rally around him. He's always the guy who's running into battle, and he's literally the epitome of what. Of what Jesse Marsh's New York Red Bulls are. He's hardworking, hardest working guy on the field every game. Like, you can always tell when his legs are a little bit heavy, because he sometimes trails off, but he'll come off the field. Like he'll come off the field, and I think he's played. Played full 90 for most of the year. There's only two times that I can remember him getting pulled off. And one was when they needed a goal in D.C. and in Columbus, I want to say. Because the Columbus game, the game in Columbus.
Did he get hurt that game, though?
I don't think so. He hasn't been injured this season. He's played. I got to look. I don't have it in front of me. Anyway. LA Galaxy, what happened?
We had a bad road game, I think, as usual, bar none. You know, I think I really thought they had a pretty decent start to that game, to be honest, Russ. I thought it was going a little bit back and forth, and then, you know, Shea Salinas absolutely dominated the Giassi Zardes, AJ De La Garza side of the wing. And that was, you know, AJ posted it, you know, in a tweet the day after saying completely unacceptable by performance by me. But then, you know, I thought, okay, let's get into halftime 1-0, which they were able to do. And I thought, you know, okay, Bruce is going to yell at them. They're going to make some adjustments and they're going to find a way. I honestly thought that they would come out and get a draw and had an outside shot of a win, even though it wasn't likely. And then as soon as Leo gets that red card, I think at that point it was damage control. I think in that sense, it was the second half. It was almost a result, if you could say it, to only concede one goal in that game, and a draw would have been like a win. So, I mean, you remove that, but, you know, as I wrote in my column for this week, you know, they've got 2 weeks off. Los Dos do have a game this Sunday at Orange County Blues. Baggio Husidic and Jose Villarreal both went 60 minutes in Los Dos's last game, so they could play a few guys there. And then at that point, I think it should finally be a completely healthy squad in the 18 for a woeful Montreal on September 12th at home.
Well, you know, Red Bulls play Chicago a week from Friday, I think. And it's, you know, that Chicago match is always, Chicago's always a mixed bag. Apparently Red Bulls can't win in Toyota Park, but we won't get there. And then they play Portland on the road. And then they finish up September at home against Orlando, who seems to be fading into the sunset. Anyway, we're going to cut to break right here. I know we're going to get back to MLS a little bit later in the show, but we've got a very special guest coming up next. We've got Matt Jordan from Houston Dynamo. He is the general manager of them, and he's going to come on to talk. Talk a little bit of everything. And when we come back, you're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Welcome back to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com. My name is Russ McKenzie, joined once again by Matt Pollard. And tonight's the night of a lot of Matts. We've got a very special guest. I'd like to welcome Matt Jordan, Vice President and General Manager for the Houston Dynamo. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you for having me on.
It's a very big pleasure to have you here. I'm actually going to have Mr. Pollard here start us off. So why don't
I'm
you,
Matt.
Hey, Matt, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? This is going to be super confusing. First of all, thank you for joining us. First off, huge win for the Dynamo this past weekend, 2-0 over one of the top teams in the Western Conference, the Vancouver Whitecaps. What did you think of the game, and how critical was that result for the club?
Well, listen, it was a very critical result, and you know, really every game in the Western Conference right now is a 6-point game. And, I've been in the MLS for over 20 years as a player and now working in the front office, and I've never seen a conference so tight as the Western Conference right now. So the margin for error is very thin, and every point matters. And so it's going to go down to the wire for sure. It's going to go down to the wire for sure, but it was a good win for us.
So the big news for Houston Dynamo is Kubo Torres arrived in Houston earlier this month. How excited is the organization and the fan base? What do you think of his play so far?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's a huge, you know, and a very important acquisition for our club, but and also for our city. Eric, he's a huge name here. He is obviously there's a massive Mexican population here in the city of Houston. And so it's a signing that makes sense both on the field and off the field for us. Eric's doing well. You know, the challenge that we face with Eric, and you see this, you know, throughout the league, is anytime it's just always very challenging to join a team halfway through the season. And he had a break of about, you know, almost 6 to 7 weeks between, you know, when the season ended down there and when he was able to get his immigration paperwork to come up with us. So he's just now finding his rhythm. And he had a really good game last game against Vancouver, had a beautiful assist. He's with the Mexican Olympic team at the moment. And then we're looking forward to getting them back here next week and getting them in good form for us to make this playoff push.
Excellent stuff, Matt. Now, moving to some other big news, obviously expansion is all the rage these days in the American soccer landscape. Now the Houston Dynamo do have their very own USL affiliate in 2016, Rio Grande Valley FC. We had the pleasure of talking with Bert Garcia a few shows ago. What went into this decision, and why did you choose the Rio Grande Valley team, and why now for the Dynamo?
Well, look, first and foremost, you know, we're really proud to be partnering with the Rio Grande Valley Group. They've done such a great job with their affiliation with the Houston Rockets. The group led by Mr. Cantu is a first class group. They don't leave any stone unturned. It's going to be the best. They're constructing the best. What will be the best USL stadium in North America. And what it really represents for us is it's the first of its kind. It's a hybrid model where we have total technical and player control, and they have the business. They're running the business side of things, and what it really helps us do is develop our players. Where there's a huge gap of development from 18 years old till the first team level, to give our guys real games, and it also provides an avenue for our guys to play in front of a great fan base in a beautiful stadium with a great group as well. I really foresee, you know, a lot of teams following this model down the line, similar to the minor league baseball model. And we're really proud about the affiliation.
Excellent. Russ.
So I've got a follow-up question to that one. How did the hybrid affiliation play into the decision to go with RGVFC?
Well, look, I think you see it. It's a model that's very successful for minor league baseball. And our president, Chris Canetti, you know, really laid the groundwork for this initiative before I got here. And over the last 8-9 months, I've been, you know, working to help, you know, get things over the line. You know, and I mean, Chris is a very smart, hardworking guy. And he's done a great job, you know, basically laying the foundation of this project. And, you know, and I've been able to draw on my past experiences of starting a standalone USL team in Montreal right before I came here. We just finished starting that team. And so, you know, the idea was definitely in place before I came here. But, you know, once given the opportunity to meet with that group and to understand, you know, everybody's goals for the project, it's going to be a win-win for everybody.
So, two more questions on RGVFC. We're very hot on player development here, so just bear with us. Mm-hmm. They're in the process of developing an academy up to U18. Will these teams be affiliated at all with the Dynamo Academy? And what's the timetable for appointing a coaching staff and starting to make signings there?
Well, we're in the process of searching for our coaching staff. So that's been well underway for a good amount of time. The player development aspect of this is obviously our biggest goal. And it's also this partnership represents the opportunity for us to, you know, for lack of a better term, expand our web. You know, there's a lot of talent down in the valley. And you know, to have the players filter up into this partnership with us and RGV, you know, it's a great opportunity for us to also identify a lot of talent and hopefully, you know, get those guys working their way up into the USL team there. And when they perform well, that'll be a direct line to our Houston Dynamo first team.
Excellent stuff, Matt. Now, shifting gears, Houston had 3 players partake in the Gold Cup this past month. 2 months now, since we're into September. Only 2 MLS teams had more players partake in the Gold Cup. What have you thought of Barnes, Taylor, and Boniak and their form so far? And in particular, what has Giles Barnes done to be such a difference maker for the Dynamo this season?
Well, look, we're obviously, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. You know, we're obviously very happy for those players that they have the quality and the ability to be selected for their respective national teams. The hard part for us is, as you alluded to, you know, we were amongst, you know, one of the hardest hit teams in the MLS with the players being gone for Copa America and the Gold Cup. So you're happy for them, but at the same time, you're kind of holding your breath when you're watching the games, you know, because you're hoping that they don't get injured or nothing bad happens. You know, unfortunately, we got with these competitions, you know, Jermaine Taylor sustained a long-term injury playing in the Gold Cup for Jamaica. Oscar Boniac Garcia as well, you know, got banged up pretty good in the Gold Cup, in the build-up to the Gold Cup. So we kind of paid the price a little bit for those guys being called in. But at the same time, you know, it's a relationship you need to foster with the federations. And, you know, and again, those relationships are important. Hopefully, collectively, we're making the best decision for the players, whether they're going to be there for part of the time or the whole time, or those aspects of things. And you know, and obviously our main motivation is to help the Houston Dynamo. So it's not an easy part of my job, for sure. And speaking of Giles Barnes, you know, I think Giles is a player that, you know, he's reaching his prime. He's becoming a difference maker in the MLS. The nice thing with Giles is that he can play a lot of different positions. He can play with two up front. He can play alone up front. He can play as a second striker. He can play wide left, as you saw, or wide right, as you saw in the game against the Vancouver Whitecaps. We had a very good game, and he's very explosive. And you know, so I think he's really hitting his stride, and he's reached the prime of his career, and we're happy that he has a Dynamo uniform on his back.
So switching gears. A lot has been made of the targeted allocation money rule and its implication on designated player signings.
Yes.
What's your opinion of the rule? What does it mean for the league and in a context of the Houston Dynamo?
Look, I think the new targeted allocation initiative is a great step forward. You know, what it does, it provides another avenue to get high quality players or retain high quality players for our league, you know. But what you've seen over, and I've been doing this a long time, and what you've seen over the last 4 or 5 months is the landscape of the league is changing very fast. And so I think, you know, different markets, you know, they approach the targeted allocation money in different ways. You know, some ownership groups or some of those real big market teams, their owners have the appetite to right away, you know, go and add another DP, you know, which then provides you an added benefit to bring in a player at a certain level. Where there's other clubs where you have to be more strategic and plan it out a little bit more further down the line. And that, in we're you know, look, we're not going to pretend. We know who we are. You know, we're a really solid mid-market team in Major League Soccer, so we have to be more strategic in calculating with the use of those funds, and we will do that, and it's going to help us to improve our team as well.
Excellent stuff, Matt. Now we're in the midst of sort of a data and an analytics revolution, and in soccer and in other sports, you know, we've spoken to other people, be it a guest from Soccer Analytics. We had Podrick Smith on earlier this season from the Colorado Rapids, who was brought in to be an analytics guy for the Rapids, and then Billy Bean just got signed as an advisor to AZ over in the Netherlands to be an advisor for them. So it's pretty clear that MLS is not an exception to this trend of incorporating analytics into soccer. What data analysis, is anything, is being developed or is in work at Houston? And of course, we're not asking you for any trade secrets.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, we're definitely a big believer in this trend. I believe data and analytics and performance analysis, along with sports science, are going to be the two elements that you're going to see a huge change in the league. You know, already it's happening, but you're going to see it even more so in the future. We've hired a performance analysis, and we're looking right now. We're starting the process of vertically integrating these metrics, you know, from the first team throughout the academy. And look, I always say, this is what I always say about, you know, data analytics and statistics, is that if you're never going to make your decision solely on this information, but it's a very useful tool to make educated decisions. And that's, you know, especially when you're making, you know, decisions on preparation for games, for post game analysis, for new acquisitions, for retaining players, and obviously using these metrics is a very important aspect of the way the game's changing. And the Houston Dynamo are right in line, and we believe in that, and that's why we've taken such a strong initiative to add this department to our club.
So your team acquired DeMarcus Beasley after the 2014 World Cup. So you're familiar, you know, with international duty, of course, with your three players going to the Gold Cup. But how has the situation with DeMarcus changed over the past few months? Of course, with, you know, his international retirement and then his eventual redeployment for the Gold Cup.
Well, look, DeMarcus is a very talented player. I actually, you know, played against DeMarcus when he was with the Chicago Fire, and at that time he was a winger. And I think that you see, you know, the quality that the player has, you know, as his career progresses, he's played for some of the biggest clubs in the world, he's able to reinvent himself. And again, you see, you know, how much of an outstanding left back he is. And obviously we're very happy that he's on our team. And really what happened is everything you've seen publicly is, you know, DeMarcus at the end of last season, he decided to retire from international duty to focus on club play. And you know, spend and not travel as much and spend time with his family, and a little bit more time with his family. And then as the build up to the summer came, you know, there Jurgen felt, you know, that DeMarcus was still a player that he really thought could bring a lot to the table. And so DeMarcus and ourselves and the national team programs, we obviously had a lot of extensive discussions. And DeMarcus is a player that, you know, he still obviously can perform at that level, and so again, it's all about finding that balance. You know, as I spoke about, it's all about finding that balance and between club and country, and it's not an easy answer, and nobody's figured it out. We're all just doing the best we can, but DeMarcus is a great pro. He's a huge asset to the Houston Dynamo, a huge asset to the national team as well, and I couldn't enjoy more working with such a great pro and such a great person.
Absolutely, Matt. Now, normally with a lot of our guests, we ask them to do a prediction. I'm not going to put you on the spot and promise playoffs for the Houston Dynamo, but what do you think is the biggest thing that you guys need to do down the stretch run of this season in order to secure a playoff spot?
Well, look, I think the biggest thing you do is you want to be in a position where you control your own destiny. And I've lived, you know, both sides of it, where you control your own destiny, and when you take care of, you control what the future holds for you with your results, that's always the best position to be in. And we're still in that position. And we, you know, you always want to avoid, you know, saying, okay, well, hey, this team needs to do this or that team needs to do that for this to happen and all that kind of stuff. So right now, we feel we've positioned ourselves well. You know, we've had 11 of our last 16 games on the road, and that's kind of been overshadowed, and that hasn't really been talked about publicly. So now we got a good run of home games, and you know, we got a good group. We've got a good mix of veterans, of European guys, of South American guys, of American guys. You know, we got good age ranges. You know, and we got a good squad. And you know, look, at the end of the day, it's going to be about results. But I'm optimistic about the group and the direction we're moving.
Matt Jordan, Vice President of the Houston Dynamo, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really, thank you. It was a great talk.
No, we appreciate it. And anytime I can help out, just let me know.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Matt. When we come back, we're going to switch gears a little bit further north further north and further west in the United States and talk to Carlton Belmar, currently playing with Portland Timbers 2 of the USL. You're listening to Last Word on Sports Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Welcome back to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com. My name is Russ McKenzie, joined once again by Matt Pollard, and one Alec Rivera has appeared. And again, we have a very special guest tonight, currently playing for Portland Timbers 2 FC, Carlton Belmar. How are you doing tonight, Carlton?
Russ, you
want to
lead off the questions?
Sure. Hang on one second. I actually didn't have it up. Again, Carlton, thank you for joining us on the show. First off, Timbers 2.
Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. First off, Timbers 2 are sitting eighth in the Western Conference in USL. Playoffs still possible. Looking back, what did you think of this season? What went well for you guys and what didn't?
I think it's definitely been an interesting season. It's had its, you know, ups and downs for sure. But for us being like a first-year team, just playing with a group of guys who've never played together, I mean, we put together some really good performances, and I feel like we showcased some of the talent that this organization has possesses. But as of right now, I mean, we're just like kind of focused on pushing for the playoffs and just finishing out this season on a good note.
Excellent stuff, Carlton. Now you lead the team in goals this season with 12, third in the Golden Boot standings. You've scored with your head and your feet, some spectacular ones. Coach Vidovic has had some very high praise for you at times this season. What's been the difference this season? What do you think you've improved on, and what do you still need to work on to improve as a striker?
I feel like I definitely have a lot to improve on still. This season I really wanted to push and make sure that I push myself to the limits, just trying to work both sides of the ball and just trying to be as consistent as possible just with my work rate, just helping the team on, like I said, both sides, attacking and defensive, and it's worked out and I've been able to, nick some balls off some defenders and score some goals that way. But as a striker, I feel like, there's still things I need to fine tune and just finishing in and around the box, and probably just my hold up play with my back to goal, but it'll all come along.
Absolutely. So as a T2 player, you're right across the hall from players like Diego Valeri, Fernando Adi, Darlington Nagby. They're all pretty much very prolific and dynamic strikers every MLS fan wants to watch. Do you get to practice and hang out with some of the first team players, and what do you learn participating and watching with them?
Don't get to hang out as much just because, both of our schedules were sometimes on the road and they're home and then they're on the road and we're home. But don't get to hang out as much. But in preseason, it was great for me just to kind of see what that level is like and how those guys play. And, people like Darlington and Nadi, like you said, and Diego are just unbelievable players. And, just their finishing in and around the box is just top notch. And, they don't really – they punish people for the mistakes they make. So it's great to be that close and being able to learn from guys like that. And, sometimes, some of the other guys get to pop down in training and get involved. So it's always great to just be a part of that and be close to such high level.
So this year saw several MLS clubs start their own USL affiliates, and a number more will be starting in 2016. The benefits point to player development for guys like you and a bit too good for, a U23 team, but not quite a first team player. Do you talk about that with other players? Do teammates or friends on other USL clubs talk about the affiliation? And what has it done for you guys?
I feel like it's done a lot. You know, it's, like I said, just being that close to, you know, what most of us are trying to achieve is just motivational. Just being able to, like, you know, being across the hall from the other locker room, it's you get to see your goals, like, right in front of you. It helps push us every day and helps, you know, bring the same intensity and try and replicate what they produce out every weekend. But from a standpoint of just talking to other people around the league, it's not as much. I'm more guys from my school asking, you know, what's it like being, like, you know, around guys like Diego and Darlington, and just being able to check out players like that. I mean, it's great, you know. It's just, like I said, it's motivational just being able to be that close to, you know, what you're pushing for.
Excellent stuff, Carlton. Now, you're originally from Virginia Beach, if I remember correctly, and anyone who follows you on Twitter can see you're definitely keeping up with VCU Rams soccer, your alma mater. You're a good ways away from D.C., so were you a D.C. United fan growing up? Did you watch MLS, or are you watching over across the pond?
I was really a D.C. United fan. I mean, I popped up to D.C. a couple times to check out some games, but not really a big D.C. United fan. Paid more attention probably to the English Premier League than MLS to begin with, but, you know, as I started, you know, getting older and getting to college, you know, and kind of, that was like the closest league to us, so that's where, you know, kind of started paying attention to more.
Who's your club in Premier League?
Interesting enough, I don't really have one.
Oh, okay.
You know, I got a couple of teams I like to watch, but I haven't really picked sides because, you know, most of my teammates get pretty passionate about that, and I kind of try and stay away from being a neutral zone.
Fair enough.
Your next team can be the one you play for, then. How about that?
Yeah, I'm down for that.
So, speaking of allegiances a little bit, being a DMV guy, sort of. I mean, you're from Southern Virginia, right? So it's not the same. But I guess, have you had the opportunity to play against Richmond? I was trying to look, and I didn't really get to it. But have you guys played Richmond this season yet?
Play Richmond?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. We haven't, no.
Okay, I was going to say, because is there any sort of, I guess, a heightened desire to win when you're playing against a team from your hometown, or do you have any history maybe following the Richmond Kickers or any of their players?
We've actually played the Richmond Kickers like a couple times in college, just like for their preseason. You know, I mean, it's always like you want to go out and perform against your hometown team, but I feel like if we ever came across them, I definitely want to bang a couple goals on.
Absolutely. And since you played your whole entire college career at VCU, can you give us your idea of how your experience at T2 differs from maybe a college program in general?
I feel like just the level is definitely higher. You know, you're playing with guys who have been, you know, just standouts at wherever they were. And whereas in like college, you might be the best player, but here it's like everyone's on the same level. Everyone's, you know, a good player, whether that be athletically or as a soccer player. And it's just like you don't really get that in college. And I feel like you can get away with more things in college than like where you can might not be able to have such a great performance in a game and still manage to, like, you know, play well and stand out. But whereas here in like the pros, you don't get to get away with that at all. They punish you for your mistakes. And it's just a different level.
So on a lighter note, I've got a couple of friends traveling up to Portland in a couple of weeks for the Red Bulls Timbers match. What is your favorite favorite spot that only the locals know?
I'd probably definitely have to go to Salt and Straw. It's an ice cream shop downtown that just has some unbelievably great ice cream, and I'd recommend the cinnamon snickerdoodle if they're wondering. It's phenomenal.
You You know, my wife has been threatening to make snickerdoodles in the house. I need to get her back on that. Anyway.
Can she threaten me?
Anyway, Carlton, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yep, and definitely good luck with the rest of the season. Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you so much.
If you're ever in D.C., we'll get you a beer.
Or in New York, for that matter. Anyway.
Okay.
So, when we come back, we're going to open the phone lines here, 732-707-7994. You're listening to Last Word on Sports Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com. And we're going to get the fourth musketeer here on in just a second. When we come back, your calls, 732-707-7994.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Is it okay to have a Metal Thursday? Is it okay to have a Metal Thursday? Because that was
yes,
hell yeah.
Yes, you can have a Metal Thursday, Russ. Fine.
You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com. My name is Russ McKenzie, joined once again by Matt Pollard, Alec Rivera, and Tyler Bailey.
What's up, guys?
Tyler Bailey, fresh in from whatever he's doing. Not...
Some sort of college thing.
Yeah.
Yes, very college.
You're like, look at you being social and having activities, Ty.
I do. I have. There's so many activities. I'm going to hate my life this semester.
Awesome. So phone lines are open, 732-707-7994. We're talking Major League Soccer, U.S. Men's National Team, a little bit of everything at this point tonight. So Alec didn't see the start of the show, and the reason he didn't was because he was seeing a documentary on DC United's Barra Brava Supporters Club. So why don't you fill us in here?
I mean, it's about as awesome as it sounds, to be honest. DC United's Barra Brava obviously set sort of the benchmark early on in MLS for supporters culture. And a large part of that was obviously the Latin American fan base that DC United built from the beginning. I was able to go watch this 22-minute documentary. Sounds really short. It's packed. There's a lot going on there. You have interviews with people like Bill Hamid, Ben Olsen. It wasn't one of the original owners of DC United, which I forgot his name at the moment because I've been awake for far too long. And Perry Kitchen.
Is this a special showing, Alec? When is it going to be? Like, is it going to end up on YouTube? Because I want to watch this now.
Okay, so there's a preview on YouTube, which pretty much does it justice. It's called Muerte o Gloria. That's in Spanish, Muerte o Gloria. In English, the translation would be Death or Glory. And basically, it talks about how La Barra Brava was sort of the inception of American soccer supporter culture. And what that really means is...
Wait, so you're telling me Seattle didn't invent soccer?
Well, color me
sorry,
shocked.
Continue. I'm sorry. I couldn't. You put the softball out there. I had to knock it out of the park.
You know...
I'm sorry, Roger. I love you.
I don't think I've ever loved an LA Galaxy fan until today. I could kiss you on the cheek, you beautiful man.
That was amazing.
He doesn't even
well
have to
done.
Watch the documentary to get it. That was wonderful. But yes, that was the basic idea. But more importantly, I had the opportunity to talk to the film's director, and I've also been connected with a couple of the producers talking about what the motivations behind the documentary were, maybe what sort of their goals were in the future. Hopefully people who watch the documentary are sort of inspired by what the people at La Barra Brava did to sort of ignite supporter culture in the United States. But also, just sort of talking about getting the opportunity to talk to them about what that means for the future for DC United and maybe what the new stadium can bring to the table in reigniting a supporters base that many would argue has been dormant for several years. So I look forward to sort of revealing what our conversations touched on and sort of letting people know sort of what supporters culture has been in DC, because people haven't really seen that for a long time, and also trying to show them where it will be again, hopefully in the near future.
If you don't want to, I understand if you don't want to spoil any Easter eggs, Alec, but was the either in the documentary or in your conversations after, was there any stadium talk for DC?
Oh, that was actually one of the most important components of the discussions we had. We obviously, none of us has any influence in what DC United Stadium looks like, or what is included in the final blueprint and footprint of the stadium. But there's sort of a vision there that DC United fans have, and people who have sort of followed the team for a long time, and the supporters. And in general, that looks pretty similar. I don't really see a way in which DC United and the people designing the stadium could mess that up, because there's just an expectation that it's so clear, and it's the same as.
Hey, Alec. We lost that.
What's Alec?
Alec.
Hello.
There you are.
Oh, there he is. Wow.
Oh.
Did you lose me?
Gotta love the interwebs.
It's so good.
Yeah, we totally didn't hear the last, half of your sentence.
Where did we lose off?
You were talking about how the supporters have a pretty unified vision of what they want out of the stadium. But I kind of have a question off that. How much input do you think the supporter culture in general has in what the company and what the city of DC are going to end up doing with that stadium? Do you think there's a large chance that the input is going to be received well and implemented correctly?
I think that pretty much the vision is very, very clear. I think that the DC United front office recognizes what supporters expect out of a new stadium. Recently, they put out a survey asking about specifically ticket prices more than anything else when it came to support sections. But what sorts of amenities that people wanted in a new stadium? And so, you know, bouncing stands were near the top. Like, that was one of the things that I think most people agreed is a characteristic of RFK Stadium. We want to keep moving forward. And so there are these aspects of DC United culture that maybe didn't originate with Barra Brava, but were there around the same time. And so they're sort of associated. And I think the timing is right for this documentary in that it speaks to a lot of the things that many people who are still involved in the DC United community today hope the club can be in the future, which is the only functional DC sports team, and I don't really know any kinder way to put it.
So, you know, a lot has been talked about with supporters culture recently. I think it's been a hot button topic this season because of the amount of, you know, turmoil with teams' relationships with their supporters groups. For instance, Blackout CF97 with Chicago Fire. We talked about that with Marty Tomczak last week.
Free ACB at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Even recently within DC United, we've had the District Ultras have issues with the front office because.
And then we got the NYCFC fan getting tased.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not good. That's probably the least good thing they could have done to that fan.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been an interesting year for supporters culture. By the way, phone lines are open, 732-707-7994. You can call in. We're talking supporters culture. So if any of you are listening, it would be a good time. We love your input. Even with the Philadelphia Union, I find the stories behind the creation of these groups very interesting. Sons of Ben existed, you know, a couple years full before Union even were announced in MLS. LaBarra Brava being very important to supporters culture, and you know, Empire Supporters Club still chanting for the Metros in the South Ward,
and possibly having their own South by Southwest exhibit next year.
Who? Empire?
It's Empire and two other supporters groups from different MLS clubs, specifically MLS clubs.
Now, I didn't know that. How'd you find that out?
That was reported earlier today, probably late afternoon. I don't really remember details. I just remember skimming over it.
Yeah, totally wasn't paying attention.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Good to see supporters culture, you know, carving out its own niche in bigger cultural events, South by Southwest.
That's actually one of the aspects that Dave Johnson was actually in the documentary that I watched tonight. And he was interviewed several times throughout the documentary, so they used clips from him several times. And he talked about how a supporter has a stronger connotation than fan. And yes, that's really the difference between soccer and other sports, is you have supporters and you have fans. Something interesting to take away from all that.
Well, you know, it's an interesting dichotomy, especially in the American sports scene. You have I was explaining this to my wife last night. We were watching the Red Bulls Town Hall. I threw it up on the TV, and we were watching it during dinner, and she was surprised because no other sports franchise anywhere really does this kind of thing. You see this around MLS clubs, and it's very important for them to reach out to the community, because these groups organize, and you don't see that with any other sport in the United States. You don't see these organized.
I don't know if that's entirely true.
Okay,
I mean, you saw all the Free Brady things and stuff like that, but that was more of a protest against the NFL than it was anything specific to the Patriots, as far as, you know, interaction with their fans.
So prove me wrong, Matt. What are you referencing?
I can recall, not specifically in an organized supporter sense, but I mean, I know multiple clubs in various different sports in various cities that, like, at the beginning of season, they'll have a special session for season ticket holders at their arena or their stadium or somewhere, and then, you know, they'll have like the head coach and one of the players come in, and then they can just ask them questions. It's fairly timid, so it's not in the same sense that I think certainly the January, or maybe it was into February, the town hall of the New York Red Bulls. But I mean, you know,
It was January.
So I mean, I have a really good friend from high school hockey who's an Anaheim Ducks fan, who he and his dad have season tickets to the Ducks, and every single year they have an opening town hall right at the beginning of preseason, and they have the GM, usually one of the owners or somebody from the governing board, the head coach, and then usually one of the other players, and they can ask them various things about. Now it's more geared towards the community stuff than say, hey, why did you fire Petke, sort of a thing, but I think I could look right now, and I'm sure I could find at least one team in each sport varying across the entire United States that has an opportunity for fans to come and openly ask them questions.
Interesting. See, I haven't been aware of any of this, you know.
They're not as well publicized, yeah, and most of them aren't controversial, where I think obviously, you know, there was, you know, like a riot was about to incite at the first Red Bull Town Hall.
It was ugly. By the way, totally different atmosphere yesterday. Totally different.
Amazing how results make people calm down.
I know. Several people actually got up and apologized. The other thing was they gave Ali Curtis a standing ovation, which didn't happen the last time either.
Certainly not.
But you know, moving right along here, you also look at the Philadelphia Union. They had a pretty big deal kind of protest at the beginning of the season, when the Union just weren't getting it. They weren't getting it done. And for a while there, the Union figured it out. Of course, they're in the finals of the U.S. Open Cup, but you gotta think that at some point that kind of protest is going to rear its ugly head head back to Philadelphia.
Oh, certainly.
They did finally get rid of Rice and Boley, though. Let's give them credit on that one, guys. It only took them 5 months to realize it was the worst idea in the world.
Oh, it was.
And it took me 10 seconds of reading that first article where I said, why are you signing a DP goalkeeper?
Again, like another goalkeeper. Why are you doing that?
Yes.
I mean, Philadelphia's got Philadelphia.
So we're gonna move. We're gonna move right along here. And look, I want to touch on this, and then I kind of want to move on. The Financial Times, the United Kingdom's version of Wall Street Journal, reported that the NASL is going to be filing a lawsuit against U.S. Soccer. U.S. Soccer Federation for hindering their attempts to become Division One. The reasons that they outlined were the proposed changes to what Division One status requires is going to be markets that have it's going from 1 million to 2 million people in the market.
Yes, they added that. Rough.
They're adding the stadium. They're adding the stadium's increase to 15,000 per
yes,
arena.
Yes, and then now they have they added you have to have at least one team in each time zone that makes up the United States and Canada, with the exception of like that end of Alaska, part of Canada, and Hawaii. So that's been hurting the NASL just because they can't get Western expansion beyond Edmonton.
And from 12 to 16 teams. Those are the four main points of the lawsuits. And you know, we've had a pretty hot debate going on amongst ourselves here, and I kind of want to give our listeners a little bit of pull back the curtain a little bit on this, because I think it's important to talk about. Just from the fact that all these things that U.S. Soccer is proposing are a good thing, and it is no secret that we are behind the progressive ladder here in the global game, right? We're
yes.
You know, was it 15th? I think MLS is about the 15th, ranked 15th in the world. I think behind, you know, championship, behind some League One in the UK, which totally makes sense. We're not there yet. We don't have the programs. The pyramid, the soccer pyramid that we're building here, is at odds with each other, because we have, you know, on one side we have Major League Soccer who's building a relationship with Third Division USL, and we have the Second Division totally separate, building a relationship with Fourth Division and PSL. Like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense yet. And from my perspective,
even more than that, it's about one division working against the others. Like, ultimately, that's what it comes down to.
Well, there it is. Like, that was my next point. From my perspective here, you're looking at first division. You're looking at first and second division. Basically, second division says, "F you guys, we're going to take our ball and go play over here." And you know, you can we're gonna do everything in our power to talk people out of watching you and supporting you and things like that.
But ultimately, isn't that sort of a desperation move? People keep telling me that NASL isn't in some sort of trouble. I keep asking myself why any rational actor, be it a league or a club or whatever, would act the way they're acting. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay, Alec.
It speaks a little bit to their model as well. I mean, you have two different philosophies in terms of a business plan here. With MLS, you've had this single entity organization that's come slowly from its roots, and they've really made a point of having this slow, sustainable progression up to where they are now, and it's paid off in some way. But NASL, here you go. This is a league that just rebooted from failure in the 70s and 80s
and
in 2011. In 2011. And here they are trying to push their weight around like they have the resources or even the recognize
that they're recognizable enough to even be on that same footing. And I don't really think that they have the kind of clout that they think they do in this situation.
I mean, so here's the issue I have with this, guys. As I would claim that if we do have resident USL or NASL people on the site, that I am one of them certainly covering St. Louis FC. So I certainly hear the USL side of things, and then by osmosis, some of the NASL stuff. I think the NASL is right from a legal, like, this is from, like, my lawyer friends, my friends in law school saying that it was a really arbitrary decision to up the metropolitan population from 1 million to 2 million. Because automatically that takes out a number of the USL markets that don't already have an MLS team and that already actually eliminate some of the current MLS markets. I don't think Sandy, Utah has that. I can't remember who else was. I don't know that Portland is at 2 million metropolitan population, and I think the only market that USL is in that doesn't have an MLS team that is of that, I think, is St. Louis at just over 2 million people in their metropolitan population. So there are
that is
an argument. And then when I wrote the USL Rising piece, in which I argued that USL is catching up to, if not surpassing, the NASL, I looked up the standards that you had for second division. And at the time that they came out in, I want to say 2011, maybe it was 2013, neither the USL nor the NASL has caught up to them. Obviously, the NASL agreed to them, saying, these are the requirements for Division II. We've been granted an addendum that right now we are officially second division, and then we are going to strive for those requirements. 3 years later, the NASL is still trying to catch up to it, still hasn't gotten to it in terms of the number of teams, the number of markets, the size of the markets, the quality of the facilities in the stadiums, or the ticket revenue, or the how many teams they have in each individual time zone. So NASL wants to argue MLS has a monopoly because of the rules for first division. The NASL hasn't even gotten to the second division requirements that they agreed on 2 years ago that they were going to build to. They haven't even crossed the first hurdle. How are they going to even argue that the second hurdle is unreal? And in all honesty, with the fact that, you know, we have USL expansion teams come up on the show, you know, Bert Garcia said we had discussions with NASL and we chose the USL over the NASL. Same thing happened with the OKC Energy. We're now seeing multiple markets that are trying to get into soccer that aren't quite on MLS's hot list, who are discussing with both of these leagues and unanimously, if not widely, taking the USL over the NASL. So it's almost as if right now, guys, if I had to bet who's going to reach that official second division requirements first, I'm almost tempted to say that the USL is going to leapfrog the NASL. And then really what clout do you have is being like officially a third division team, thinking mentally that you're a first division team with no clout, no money, and you've got teams folding left and right.
Exactly. Well said.
Phone lines are open, 732-707-7994. If you have input, if you want to talk about something else, if you're tired about hearing about this, or whatever, give us a call here, 732-707-7994. You know, I want to put this into, I think Matt's point, USL is catching up and surpassing, NASL. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about, especially you and me, Alec, you and I have gotten into this a little bit. It seems like NASL is making some of the same mistakes that they did the first time around, you know, putting a lot of faith in the Cosmos to carry the financial burden of the league. And you want to hear something crazy? I remember hearing this on a couple different podcasts, just talking with people. The Cosmos are going to selling out games when they're away, and you know, everybody wants to see Raul. Everybody wants to see this club play, and again, there's no. I know Bill Peterson says that there's not a problem with NASL. There's no financial issues, you know, but you have clubs folding left and right, and one of their biggest partners, and I'm going to say it, Traffic Sports was one of their biggest partners, and they are no more. They no longer exist because they're all awaiting extradition. And I think that speaks to what it, again, it feels like sour grapes on the NASL's part to put this lawsuit out there when U.S. soccer is actually trying to catch the game up to where it needs to be. Is it lengthening the divide between MLS and NASL? Yeah, but NASL was doing a pretty good job of that themselves, especially when most of the time most of their teams are playing Route 1 soccer. I've never seen so many breakaway goals in a soccer match in a series of soccer matches other than when I watch NASL. It's really something else.
Yeah, and it's not U.S. soccer's job necessarily to facilitate the growth of an individual league just for ha-has. You know, it's about advancing the pyramid as a whole. And if NASL can't do that, U.S. soccer has the obligation to put, not necessarily their faith, but more resources and take them more seriously, the USL, if they're showing that they're going to be the league that helps move the pyramid forward and NASL is not.
But they're not. They're not playing ball. They're not playing ball with the first league. They're not playing
exactly.
Ball.
But that's irrelevant because ultimately, what matters, like you said before, is advancing the pyramid as a whole. And so, if U.S. Soccer recognizes that, well, for now, we're not going to put any of our resources into NASL because they're not playing ball, they're going to continue to suffer. That's ultimately the only outcome of what happens if they continue on their current streak. They face annihilation or assimilation, ultimately, in the next 10 years.
And it's really just it comes down to that if they want to, you know, further the not only the divide in quality of play, but the relationship divide between them and the rest of U.S. soccer by continuing with this lawsuit and actually bringing it forward and trying to get whatever they're going to get out of it. I mean, you can't have two Division I leagues, really. I mean, look, first of all, I want to interject with this here. Even if they are a Division I league, what does that mean for them? Is that going to help their status with fans, with market, relevancy? Market relevancy?
Market share.
Is it going to help them get better players, better attendance numbers, better TV deals? I don't think so, because they're still the same organization.
And that's the point. Look, most MLS is building a structure where they can develop players, and yeah, NASL has moved to make some of those changes. But still, you have teams that are paying a couple thousand dollars a year for players to ply their trade.
And that's the craziest question of it all is. At this point, MLS can keep growing and growing and growing, but if NASL or somebody on the second or third tier doesn't grow with it, then when you're a U.S. national team fan, you're not going to see better results than we get now. You're going to see a whole bunch of really athletic players continue to fail on the international stage, which, as fun as it sounds, is like watching Sunderland.
We watched a lot of Sunderland last year. And
we're going to watch a whole bunch more now.
Yeah.
DeAndre
Yedlin. Matt, you got anything? Got anything further on this?
I think we have beaten this iteration of the dead dong dupe horse to death. So I think we should move on to this little thing that's happening tomorrow involving the madness that is once again another Jurgen Klinsmann 23-man roster.
Oh man, the kazoo is playing in the background so hard as he selects this roster this time. No other instrument could do that thought process justice. Because, I mean, it's one thing to not have Michael Bradley. It's another thing to not have Michael Bradley and then not replace him with another midfielder that Klinsmann views as a creative option to create things.
Well, he did. It's just that creative option is mixed discarude.
And we know that he's more of a distributor than a creator. That's fine. But also, if he's going to use this as really the warm-up and the final tune-up, really, for the Mexico match on October 10th, why is he bringing in so many of these players who failed him pretty miserably at the Gold Cup and saying, yeah, these are my guys. These are who I want to take against the best team in CONCACAF right now for a spot in the Confederations Cup?
Well, I mean,
that logic I don't understand.
Absolutely. And some of these other selections, you know, okay, they brought back Tim Howard, which, if nothing else, Tim Howard will make it such that Brad Guzan will come out of his shell and play better. But then we hear the report saying, you know, Brad Guzan's the incumbent, so he's going to get the benefit of the doubt. And then Jonathan Spector, I didn't even know he was still playing. I don't know which league Birmingham City's in, to be honest. And yes, I'm happy to see.
They're,
you know,
in
I think
two.
They're in League Two?
Yeah. I know. No. I'm making that up.
They're in the championship. Okay, at the very least, it's in a league I've heard of, and I've played on FIFA, to be fair. Hashtag Tim Ream. So in that case, but I mean, you know, we harped on it. You know, we wanted some you know, I think all four of us here wanted some combination of Jeff Cameron, Matt Beisler, and Omar Gonzalez involved in the center back position. So all three of them are back. But I look at this roster, and the thing that still scares me is, like you said, Ty, the players who were brought in, who Klinsmann, you know, hung his hat on, who ultimately failed him, like Ventura, Alvarado, and John Anthony Brooks as a center back pairing, they're both in here. So I'm optimistic about certain aspects of this roster, but I look and I see some of the same holes. And how do we know that he's not going to trot out Alvarado and Brooks against Peru, against Brazil, and then ultimately against Mexico? Because at this point, this needs to be a dress rehearsal for the playoff against Mexico.
Exactly. And that's what he says it is. And that's really what doesn't make sense to me. Because you have guys like Greg Garza and Joe Corona, and to some degree, Michael Orozco-Fiscal. Joe Corona and Greg Garza aren't really getting minutes in Liga MX.
They're not.
I don't know what... And he keeps saying that's one of his big things. You have to be getting minutes with your club. You have to be playing well with your club. Well, we have Jozy Altidore back in here. He's had a recent, you know, upswing in form. But generally, over the past couple of months, he's been pretty close to trash. And then you have guys that aren't getting minutes with your club. You have guys that are coming in out of the wilderness, like Jonathan Spector. You're playing
with
two
long beards. Rip Van Winkle, John Spector.
You want to know why I like Jurgen Klinsmann as a coach? Is because he didn't take any of my DC United players, and terrible form DC United can beat any league in any club in MLS.
Well, the other thing that I don't understand is why he doesn't bring in a player like Eric Lehi and instead decides to put two center backs in the right back competition in Orozco and Jeff Cameron, who I just want to point out, Klinsmann said, he came out publicly and said, yeah, if Jeff Cameron wants to be playing with us, he needs to be playing and starting at center back with Stoke City. And then he brings him in only to play him at right back, when there are other right back options that are maybe a little bit better equipped than him to play right back.
Who?
Eric Lehi, a few of the guys. You can put Yedlin back there, but I think he's going to play him as a winger.
Yeah, constantly.
So, I mean, look, he's great cover as a right back.
Look, Mark Hamler. We'll talk about him in a second.
It's just another Klinsmann contradiction, and it's just one more ingredient in this roster that's going to be more of a gross, lumpy stew than a nice, well put together soup.
And while we're out of this, guy, since Jurgen is completely unpredictable, Jermaine Jones is listed as a midfielder. How do we know Jones isn't going to come back at center back?
I don't want to talk about that.
I mean, he said that's over, but that doesn't mean anything.
I will not believe it until the lineup is out. I am.
You know what drives me crazy is as terrible as DC United's been, Steven Birnbaum can play a sole center back. The reason that DC United's been getting torn apart is because of Bobby Boswell.
I'll buy that. Watching the Red Bulls take apart DC, I have to agree with that.
I mean, there's
there's no shots fired here. It's true.
Oh, come
it's
on,
true.
Russ.
No,
don't
it,
hide it.
Look.
Oh
look,
no, I mean, I would too. I'm not. I like.
So
I'm not,
Aaron Johansson scoring his first goal in the Bundesliga.
Great segue. Hey, look at that. At least he's in form and playing with his club. He's getting minutes.
So I'm more optimistic about him. So that's something that's exciting. You know, I know Bobby Wood's actually been playing for Union Berlin. So I don't know that I would have him for Mexico against the United States per se. But, you know, I think that was
one
thing.
He's a giant killer. The Netherlands, Germany, Mexico. He slays them all.
okay, if nothing else, I said back in January, Bobby Wood wasn't in a good situation. He needed to leave his club situation. He needed to go somewhere else and start. He went somewhere else. He's starting. He's scoring goals. He seems like a healthier player, and I'm kind of excited to see what the kid does. You know, maybe that turns into something. Maybe not for the U.S. against Mexico, but maybe for the hexagonal, at the very least for January camp.
Phone lines are open, 732-707-7994. By the way, Matt Pollard, the award of the night goes to you jumping on that grenade. So I'm going to throw this out there. We've been an entity on the interwebs for a year.
Hey,
buy you a cake.
We really should have shown up with like a cake in the shape of a number one.
Chocolate cookies.
Yeah, to all of our remote.
How are we doing this via the internet, guys?
Well, we do it via the internet. You know, we're live. We can hear the sound of Alec doing whatever he's doing with a wrapper.
Pringles, Alec.
Was it Pringles?
Shots fired.
So, you know, we've had a lot of great people on the show. And again, I just want to thank the listeners, of course, you guys who've been doing this with me for a year and really put me back on the airwaves, and also, you know, the guests that we've had some pretty impressive people. You know, just tonight we had Matt Jordan from Houston Dynamo and Carlton Belmar from Portland Timbers too. But you know, even going further back, our first guest was actually Dave Johnson. A little over a year ago, we had him, Dave Johnson, who is the play-by-play voice for DC United. And, you know, the second guest was one Mark Fishkin from Seeing Red, the Red Bulls podcast. I know. Well, there was that home-and-home there with the Atlanta Cup back last year. But really, thinking about the guests we've had, Kristen Press, and we've made a friendship with Harrison Crow and Drew Olson over there at American Soccer Analysis. We've had
them on. Love you.
And Aaron Lillianwall from MLSsoccer.com covers the Sounders. We gotta have him on soon. Just thinking about him. I keep thinking about him. We have to bring him on. But you know, it's been a great ride. It's been a great ride, and it makes me excited for what we've got going on in the future. I want to thank you guys and give you an audio high five or something like that for sticking with it. And we've done a lot of shows in that period of time. So guys, jumping right back into it. This is a weird
backline predictions.
Yeah, this is a weird. Who's going to start for the U.S. men's national team tomorrow on the backline? And what position?
Man.
And what position?
I have La Chupacabra at center back.
Is that what we're calling Alvarado now?
I was going to say that.
Who is that? Is John Brooks the werewolf?
She's a man,
then?
Or he's a woman? I don't really.
Oh, nice. I think we're gonna have my
Are
dog
you suggesting
start to get
that Amanda
back?
Bynes is gonna start for the U.S. men's national team? Alex?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
There it is.
Exactly.
Matt Doyle this afternoon.
In the same form that she was in when she made that video on the treadmill when she was in New York.
Geez.
Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
I wish
I didn't. But I think I'm gonna second Matt Doyle's prediction this afternoon, which was DeMarcus Beasley's cats. Brooks Alvarado and an avocado.
So they're playing in the.
Is it a ripe avocado?
No, it's very old and soggy.
It's very old and moldy. Oh, okay. Did it at least come from Whole Foods?
No, it's not even organic.
Does it have GMOs in it?
Oh, yeah. God.
And all I heard was three in defense, so all I remember is the first half
and
of
it. And is it pumped with meat and gluten, too?
God, it's terrifying.
No, that wouldn't be an avocado. That would just be like a whole new horrible
thing. I'm trying to make
it
the thing that California people would hate the most. So I'm suggesting that we add
gluten. Look, if you put all that together in like a taco or something, I'm sure Californians would love it. As long as it wasn't like old and, you know, bad.
Okay.
All right, moving back to actual soccer, if you want a real prediction, as long as he's healthy and doesn't pick up a knock on upon entry to camp again, I think it's going to be Beasley on the left.
Yep.
I don't want it to be Brooks and Alvarado in the center, but it's going to be Brooks and Alvarado in the center, so I think we all have to prepare ourselves mentally for that nightmare.
To be creamed by Peru.
To just be destroyed by Peru. And then on the right, it's probably going to be Jeff Cameron because he's the most experienced at playing right back as a center back.
Why even bring Yedlin with you?
He's going to play in the
Yedlin
wing.
In the midfield on the right, and then have Cameron lock it down for if he gets too far forward.
I don't dislike Yedlin as a right wing option for the U.S. national team. He's done well. When he comes on as a sub, he absolutely destroys opponents' back lines. So I can't fault Jurgen for doing that.
Mm-hmm. I like Matt Doyle's prediction with the avocado and the cats.
The cats would be interesting.
Yeah.
How many cats are there? Are there three?
I think there's probably three, and they're all standing.
We should
on
have
each
DeMarcus
other.
On the show and ask him about his cats.
Well, he plays for Houston.
I will totally go beg DeMarcus to be on the show.
So. Guys, I'm gonna cut it off right here. I think we're
How
done.
How dare you?
I know. It's always sad when it comes to an end. You know,
it's our anniversary, and you're just making me shut up.
Oh, what it? I've been trying to make you shut up for the last year. You kidding?
I know you're never gonna win.
I know I'm never gonna win. So you've been listening to Last Word.
You guys are like an old married couple.
You have no idea. So you've been listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio only here, lastwordonsports.com. On behalf of Matt Pollard, Tyler Bailey, Alec Rivera, Raj Cleaves, and I'm not going to – who is a founding member. I'm not going to go through the list of guests. You all know who you are. And the various listeners we've had over the last year. Shout out to Brooklyn Bound Supporters Club, who has been a big part of us getting out there and, you know, supporting grassroots soccer. I feel like we've had the entirety of the USL front offices on this show, and we really thank you guys too. Looking forward to another great year and beyond of Last Word Soccer Club Radio. On behalf of Carlton Belmar, Matt Jordan, Alec Rivera, Tyler Bailey, Matt Pollard, I wish you guys a good luck and good night.
Russ may be my engagement ring out of DC United trophies that they have and the New York Rebels don't.
Now, see, that was just me.
Oh man, I even wrote it down.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get your last word.